There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday in live local talk over the next couple of hours. And speaking of today being Tuesday, a couple things. Number one, it is, let's see, 3 weeks from now that we're heading to the polls. It's primary day, Super Tuesday in the state of Alabama. We'll talk more about that, what's coming up in the next few weeks. Some of the polling data that's come out in the Senate race, new information out today. Actually came out late yesterday. We'll talk about that coming up over the next couple of hours. But yes, some movement there. And of course, not only is it 3 weeks out from Super Tuesday, it's the second Tuesday of the month when Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us in studio to hang out and answer y'all's questions. Welcome.
Glad to be here, Sean, as always.
It's always good to get you back. And we'll talk about that. Also, a reminder, we'll check in with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, looking at severe weather chances. Last night, it was really Washington County and Clark County. It will be tomorrow night into Thursday for us in Mobile and Baldwin County, but we'll talk to Dr. Bill more about that coming up in the show as well. And it is good to see the sheriff back in here. And I want to talk about. So I want to get into just right now, Mobile City Council meeting's going on. I was monitoring that as you came in, listened to some of the discussion based around the annexation vote and those opposed to it and all that. But this is absolutely linked at the hip with the discussion of the police jurisdiction and this proposal by Councilman Joel Days to pull the city and MPD out of the police jurisdiction.
That's right, and they've had a couple of committee meetings about that. And in fact, I attended one of them last week, and was kind of somewhat trying to stay out of the fray a little bit. We had already provided them the stats and input, but they wanted to still hear from us, and so I kind of laid it out to them what kind of issues it would involve and how negative it would affect the city of Mobile with what they were trying to do.
I think a lot of people heard you because I wasn't there, but my phone was ringing within not long after that. What did you, when you were in that committee meeting and you went and explained from your perspective as a sheriff, you've got the rest of the county outside the municipal areas, but what did you tell people inside the city of Mobile that would happen if you were all of a sudden the police jurisdiction became the jurisdiction of the sheriff's department?
Well, if that were to happen, if they were to roll the jurisdiction in, it would leave 70,000 people in the unincorporated area for the sheriff's office and volunteer fire stations to be responsible for. And there's a lot of those areas are not covered by a volunteer fire station. And we don't have the deputies to do that, nor do we have the funding. The county government cannot pass sales taxes, whereas the city has passed sales taxes to tax in that area. So if they pull in, they quit taking their taxes, but those taxes aren't collected by the county, and so there's no money to pay for the police protection. So I told them, if you do that, Mobile will cease to exist as it is today. It'll be the slow death of Mobile, just like happened in Birmingham many years ago when they let themselves get boxed in. It would probably politically force me to encourage the West Mobile to either incorporate or take some kind of action to be able to create some funding to either create their own police department or contract with the sheriff's office, similarly to what the city of Sims does.
So the county, it has no taxing mechanism there.
That's correct.
Because a lot of people don't think about that. If the police jurisdiction comes back, there's not anything to kick in.
Right. The county cannot pass a sales tax like the city can. The city is authorized to increase sales taxes. The county government does not have that authority. They don't have what's known as home rule. So it would impact the county to the tune of about $4.8 million a year, but we would not be able to get up to strength like that in 2 years is what they were asking. And then they said, well, how long would it take? And at best, I would think it would take 4 years. But then I also pointed out how devastating that would be to the police department of the city of Mobile, because many of their officers come to the sheriff's office once they have a couple of years on. And, I pointed out to them, I had just recently hired five of their officers just recently. And the only reason we probably don't hire more is we don't have more openings. But if all of a sudden we create 48 more deputy sheriff positions, then I suggested to them probably 40 of those 48 would come from the police department, which would be devastating to them, in addition to eventually boxing the city off. But so Councilman Small asked me why were they coming from the police department to the sheriff's office, and I told him there were several reasons. Just our starting salary is $500 more a month, but we really don't hire that many brand new officers we send to the academy. So when we hire an officer from the PD, we generally can bring them in at the same salary they're making. But I said, but it's not just the salary, it's political interference with their jobs and stuff. And and Councilman Small said, he took offense with that, I think, saying, well, I've been told I'd be arrested if I interfere. I said, well, so act as if the council doesn't interfere with the police department and all. And I pointed out, I said, well, things must have drastically changed, because the 10 years I was police chief, there was constant interference by certain council members on it. And of course, I could point out in this very meeting, Councilman Richardson blasted the police department for being shorthanded, for not having a recruiter, and went on and on for 5 minutes about you need a recruitment if you had a recruitment, you know, like the fire department. 15-20 minutes later, Councilman Small asked Director Barber, he said, 2 years ago I helped y'all do some recruiting. Don't y'all do that? He said, yes, sir, we have a whole team of recruiters. You know, so when the police department feels, you know, here's a council member dressing them down because they don't have recruitment, he ought to know
they
have recruitment.
When they do,
they have a whole team of it. Lieutenant Kay Taylor has been in charge of that, I think, for several years or a couple of years, as well as other officers.
Don't let facts get in the way.
That's right. So, I mean, that's just a small portion of the kind of interference when you see your city leaders criticizing the department rather than trying to build them up and strengthen them.
I got to say, from the outside, looking in at what's going on, there are members of law enforcement, I figure, are being used as pawns in this.
That's right.
I mean, I'm just going to say, you know, and that's not because you're sitting here. I'd say it if you weren't sitting here, that y'all are going to end up through this process being pawns, because it's going to be, if this does happen, then it'll be less secure. If this does happen, it'll be more secure. I mean, it's y'all become pawns in this.
That's right. And then I point out the instability of the police department. It's been unstable for well more than 20, probably 25 years. You've had a turnover at the rate of at least 12-15% a year. And so you've got a whole police department that is just with a lot of inexperienced officers, very talented, good officers, but they just don't have the institutional knowledge. You know, somebody that's been there 10-15 years, so I know this crime family, I know that crime family, oh, this person's related to that, it's probably going to be this person. You don't have that, and so you don't have as many senior officers to be able to instruct and show the younger officers, because many people leave.
And how many, I mean, you said it the other day, how many would you be, in your estimation, how many police officers would you take from MPD and hire as deputies with the sheriff's department?
Well, from looking at the ratios,
70,000 people, right?
70,000. The police department, I think, said that they police that area with 44 officers are assigned to the jurisdiction. So I thought, okay, we would do it with, like, say, 48 deputies, because that would give you four to be in support services roles, like detectives to support the patrolmen.
Okay.
And crime. So that's kind of where we derived that. And we also looked at a formula to try to get the same ratio to the citizens of Mobile County that we currently have when we bring in those. And so that's where we came up, and it'd be somewhere around, you know, 4.8 million a year.
It'd be a big blow to MPD.
It'd be a big blow to the county's budget. And then going forward, if the county had to take over an additional 4.8 million or something reoccurring every year, that would affect our existing workforce and future raises and things of that nature, because, quite frankly, none of the elected officials this day and time want to get, you know, caught up trying to pass a tax. Of course, the only way Mobile County could do it would be to go to the legislature, and I can assure you the legislature would not say, okay, Mobile County, we're going to pass a sales tax for you to help y'all.
Did y'all know that? I mean, this is something that I think people forget, how our system's set up, and maybe it's this way in other states, I don't know, but Alabama, we've got our thing that at a county level, decisions have to be made in Montgomery.
That's correct.
And that's always, means it's a whole bunch of people in our business.
That's right. It's always problematic because, you know, when you go to Montgomery, you have all kinds of divisive forces, and it just becomes really politicized rather than letting, you know, the home rule is where, you say government is best closest to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the county level, it's not as close to the people because it's the business has to be done in Montgomery for many things.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about the Montgomery portion of what you do every day being a sheriff.
It's a dangerous time right now we're living in.
My gosh.
Session. It's in session.
Yes, every minute, it's in session. Lord knows what could happen.
That's right.
All eyes on Goat Hill, even from the law enforcement perspective. We'll talk about that when we get back. More with Sheriff Sam Cochran and your chance to ask the sheriff right now at 343-0106. It could be about this or any other question you have for the sheriff. Light it up right now at 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Second Tuesday of the month, our guest in the studio, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, hearing that Mardi Gras music. Y'all play like for the horses and stuff in the crowd. Do they get to hear? They get to hear like Mardi Gras music or something to get them ready for the season.
Yeah, get them ready. In fact, the horses sometimes start vibrating. I notice when you ride them in the parade sometimes when they get close to those boom booms, you know. But it's a fun time here. You know, it's just hearing that music makes me happy because I grew up in Mobile and always were involved in Mardi Gras, still am, and you know, I like to look at it on the positive side of things.
Hey, you and I both. I love it. I become, mm-hmm. You watch me. I'm like a kid each year at this. But I always think about, I was like, I'm looking at your deputies and look at you and look at horseback down there. I'm like, been around horses enough to know that when things are quiet, sometimes the horses have a mind of their own. And then to watch deputies riding those horses in those close quarters and with the music and the noise and the, I mean, people have been around. I think the only probably people appreciate it have been around horses to know how incredible those horses are to be able to do that and not put somebody in a wall.
Yeah, you know? That's right. It's fascinating how it can work. The horses in the crowd, and you know, I remember Chief Harold Johnson when he came here many years ago said, you know, people fear that horse because it'll step on you, mm-hmm. or something, and they'll get out of the way, but they know it's a horse, and so they don't hold the horse at fault.
Right.
Whereas a guy on a motorcycle, if you runs over somebody's foot, then the people want to strike him upside the head or something.
Right.
You know,
but nobody's going to strike the horse.
Exactly.
Well, I think the horse, I mean, when it's time to clear a street, I think mm-hmm. I see it do a better job than human beings sometimes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but just as a side note, I mean, they are, obviously, they're not just, they go through special training the same way the canines do and all that, right?
Yeah, they do. They have different obstacle courses they put them through and have plastic bags flowing through the air and fans blowing, maybe a little fire and some fireworks and stuff.
They
really learn and get accustomed to it. You just can't get on a regular horse and ride into a crowd because, just...
Right. Because I've been in places where there's way less spooky things that happen, mm-hmm. and if horses put me in a tree or put me,
they can just react to something they've never seen before, and bags in the air, you know, are really...
I didn't think about that.
Horse don't know what it is until they get used to it.
So all that training's being done to get those horses ready for Mardi Gras. And we're talking about a whole bunch of things this hour. We are talking about what you said at this meeting with the council, what it would take for you to take over,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for the sheriff's department to take over the 70,000 people within the PJ, if MPD pull back and the city pull back. And you said you're looking at least how many deputies?
We figured 48 deputies.
Okay. Problem is, there's that. You would take those, most likely, most of them from MPD.
Yeah, because we receive a lot of applications from their officers continuously.
But the other question is, how the heck are you going to pay for it?
That's the problem for us, because the county doesn't have a taxing source. We can't tax and can't increase taxes, whereas the city is taxing that area. But they did agree at this meeting last week that if they were to pull out of that area, they would not continue to tax those people, which I applaud them for that, because that would be the moral and right thing to do. You don't tax people without giving them services.
You're a better man than I, Sheriff. I wouldn't even applaud them. That's just what you're supposed to do. I'm a city guy, and I look at things from a city perspective a lot. But if you're not providing the service, you can't collect the tax.
I don't think so, but they say that there's some legal precedent on some forms of tax.
It's legal, doesn't make it right.
That's exactly right.
I mean, I have at least a foot and a half of my feet in the city and about half of my foot with county issues, but I still don't see it that way.
Yeah.
You cannot tax and not provide services.
Well,
you can't do that.
And let me defend Councilman Joel Daves. I mean, he's putting it forward because it's an issue. They're paying, they're collecting $12.5 million in that area, but they're spending $24 million, they say.
Right.
So, I mean, he's got an interest, a financial responsibility to citizens of Mobile, and so to continue to be providing services that are not being paid for, he's correct, and it needs to come to a head, and it needs to be settled some way, and the obvious settlement is annexation. The people want to come in. They want to pay their fair share. Mobile needs to grow. That's one of several ways of growing, but through annexation and all is one way. And then, of course, you've got people grow within the city. But Mobile, let me share some stats with you. Mobile has been stagnant since 1970. Since 1970 to present, the city of Mobile's population has only increased 1.02%. In that same time span, Fairhope has gone up 330-something%, Daphne 900-something%, Tuscaloosa 48%, and Huntsville 38%. Of course, Huntsville is really growing, and they're soon to take over, and Mobile is falling further behind. It's terrible.
Since 1970.
I had this recently looked up by the census data, and you can cut across many, many ways of, you know, few years, but we've been losing population every decade except for one since the form of government changed in 1985. We've lost population every decade except for one. It increased 2000.
And here is that population growth sitting on the western side.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And with the infrastructure already built, low maintenance, it would increase the property tax, high-value property taxes, so you collect more property tax, so you have more money left over to disperse. I mean, Chief Barber pointed it out a while back. You'd get $5 to $10 million more in COPS grants for the law enforcement, but when you increase your population, other grants come from that population too, like housing board grants, public housing grants, and things like that, all the way across the board. Even probably the monies for your hospitals and all kinds of grants, but it's all based on the census and the population. Well, we got knocked out of it for the census, but because we missed the deadline.
Because three members of the city council voted against.
That's exactly right. Lack of looking out for the best interest of the city. It was best interest of themselves.
All right. We grab some calls here. And phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106. Tim is in Alberta. Tim, you're up first. John with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, thank you both. Just a couple of quick comments. I would like to say that the horse is awesome. Are also trained to do what they have to do if they do need to move you around, because I've had one move me around and I didn't want to move. So that being said, Sheriff, I was wondering, do you guys have a motorcycle team? I noticed Mobile has them, and I think I've seen some state troopers with some. Would you ever consider having a motorcycle team in the parade? I like to watch the Mobile City do the little turnarounds they do up and down the road on those little bikes, you know, when they make all that noise and flash all those lights. That's pretty cool. And my last question is, who would pay for someone to walk, say, behind the horses as they go down through the parade when you are in the parade or whatever, to scoop up whatever might be left by the horse? Because I have walked in the parade with the band before, and it becomes a catastrophe if you walk through it. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen. Enjoy yourself.
That's the obstacle course that's created for the band members. You know, some of those band members can really dance well, and that's just an added obstacle.
Step over the old road apple.
That's just one of the negative aspects of it, although some would say some horses have capability of putting up a certain bag or something on
right.
it. I like that. But as far as motorcycles with Sheriff's Office, no, we don't have any and don't plan on getting any. We just really don't have the need in rural areas. And I'm not a big fan of motorcycles and policing, although I know it's you've got to have some. But the years I was police chief, I cut down the numbers because, just tell you, when an officer gets in a wreck on a motorcycle, it's devastating. And I think my second or third month as police chief, we had an officer, Obie McClinton, got killed on a hit and run at Mohawk and Government, and that was always left wounds in me to have to go meet the widow at the hospital. But and then I had the officers get hit in escorting the Senior Bowl, and three on motorcycles went down on the interstate one time. They're out for months and months, and they'll say, well, you can do more stuff with the motorcycle, like in the parade and stuff, and that's true. And you can escort houses, you know, but I'd say, well, just use twice as many cars for this short little period. But I just saw so many officers over the years do it, so I reduced down to, I think, 6 or 8 motorcycles from 16 when I became chief, and I guess it was 96. But so I'm not a
like, not a motorcycle
fan. I know it's a just part of the job.
And the horses, Tim said, I actually never even, maybe it's too much farm boy. I mean, I never even noticed I noticed it, but it like never. Never been an issue. I mean, out of all the things I could step in out there, little stuff from a horse is probably the least.
Yeah. And, you know, the sheriff's office has a tradition with horses. I mean, kind of the sheriff from out west, you know, and it's always been the sheriff's offices generally have horses, and we have the sheriff's office.
I dig the horses. Dig the horses. Coming right back. Take some more phone calls and text at 343-0106. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. And there's a couple questions. I got folks on the phone. We'll get to you in just one second here. This unnamed texter. Now, I like this. Most people are using their phones while driving. I don't know if that's true, but he said, how many citations is your office writing? Are you enforcing this?
It's very difficult to enforce the existing law because if someone is texting, all they've got to do is say they were looking at the GPS or they were on the phone and not texting. There is a movement to do hands-free Alabama. In fact, I attended a briefing on that two Fridays ago, and it really, if you pass that law in the states that it's passed, it has cut traffic fatalities down by like half, and pedestrians being struck by vehicles has really affected that. So, but yeah, there's about eight different excuses that someone can give if you pull them over for texting while driving. Very difficult to do.
All right, and this question will be probably from the concealed carry angle, and I would remind this texter as well that I had a interview with the Attorney General about this. You can go back in the podcast and listen to what the AG said, but this texter said, as sheriff, do church-going people have the same protection right to protect themselves for as a gunman? I guess maybe from gunmen as homeowners have under the castle law, I think he's saying, but yeah, stand your ground. So I guess to translate, this might be voice text. Do people going to church, concealed carry, or people who are at a church worshiping have the same rights as castle doctrine?
They do. Okay. Yeah, it started off with the castle doctrine. You had a right to defend your castle, so to speak, your house.
But and then they later
it was amended to say stand your ground, where you don't have to be in your house. If you're outside and if you're occupying your space, you have a right to be where you're at. You have a right to defend yourself. You don't have to then be in your house. And that's so you stand your ground. So the church issue, I think someone was trying to pass a bill to say, make it legal to carry a gun in a church or something. Well, that right is already there. It's already legal. So they were just trying to get political publicity out
Thank
of
you.
It when, in fact, the law already allows someone to carry concealed in the church. But mind you, a lot of churches have security, and if you're going to do that, you really need to know who the security are in the church if something happened, because there may be some already people designated to take action.
See, y'all, I'm not the only person that says bills get filed just for publicity. Because that's what the Attorney General said. I mean,
he
came on and said, if there was a need for this, I'd be all behind it. Mm-hmm. He said, but the laws are, just know that, y'all, when you hear something come up, and I'll speak, I'm not speaking for the sheriff, this is for me. And this is the time of year, at the beginning of session, you start to hear a lot of these bills filed. Just check if that it's not already the law, mm-hmm. that they're just trying to, like, here's a good idea. Well, yeah. It's such a good idea that it's already a law. We don't need to do
that's,
it again.
That's right.
All right, let's go to the phones. And Freddie Wheeler in Mobile, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hello, Sean. Hello, Sheriff. And I want you to know, as part of a member of the NXWestMobile.org organization, we appreciate your support as far as annexation. And sure. To that end, the day that you made your presentation to show that we are not just complainers, we offered a proposal to the ad hoc committee that would take and do some of the very concerns that they were about, because Fred Richardson pointed out that the committee meeting wasn't about annexation, and he said it was about police jurisdiction rollback, and I actually agreed with him. I said, well, except for the fact this wasn't about police jurisdiction rollback, it's about cost control.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them a proposal using
you
the
did.
Figures that the county and the city both agreed upon, and showed them where if they were to take and annex the areas, that they would increase the revenue from that area from the about $12.5 million up to about $25 million, leaving them about $1 million short. And then further suggested that if they go ahead and roll the police jurisdiction back to the mile and a half, that that would probably allow them to take and cover that police jurisdiction of a mile and a half by collecting that $25 million. So it would be very costly. And then we also took and added some ideas in there about one of the biggest complaints that we're hearing is the fact that there are neighborhoods that are being bypassed. We'll have a plan when they annex that they could start adding these other neighborhoods so they could be bought into the city. And that way it's a win-win for everybody. But it got tired of going up there and just complaining. I wanted to offer a proposal that was actually based on the complaints that the city council had about what to do. But as everybody knows, or most everybody knows, it's more about somebody's political ambitions as opposed to what's good for the city of Mobile. And it's like I told the committee, they need to stop worrying about whether they're going to be the mayor of a black city or a white city, and start worrying about whether they're going to be the mayor of a city, period. And that's going to take, and that'll go a long way to solving a lot of the issues.
Sure. Yeah, I heard your presentation. It was factual and on point. And I've always said, so goes Mobile, goes the area.
So, and then the other thing that you brought up, Sheriff, which I was attended that meeting as well, was House Bill 74, which is the hands-free bill. As a motorcyclist, I strongly support that legislation, and we'll be working that as part of another organization I belong to mm-hmm. take and make sure that gets passed this time, because you were correct, and motorcycles are a risk-based activity mm-hmm. and anything you can do to lower that risk enhances your ability to survive in traffic. And on that, and we're trying to get rid of allowing 14-year-olds to be able to get on a motorcycle and ride too, so that's another
good
issue that we're working.
I really appreciate the call. Thank you. Leaves the line open at 343-0106. Speaking of riding vehicles, from the text line, Jason asked for me to ask you, said, please ask the sheriff to increase patrols in Kushla on McLeod Road and Dogwood Trail. We continue to have people trespassing and vandalizing property and riding ATVs in the streets.
Got it.
What's the law on ATVs?
ATVs are illegal to ride on the street. They're not certified by the highway traffic and safety, whatever, for the proper equipment. And so even if you try to add stuff, it's just not certified, and it's against the law, and it's a reckless driving ticket if you get caught.
What about people riding down the side of the road in that? I guess that's the easement that belongs to the – I'm thinking, for example, on Highway 45.
Yeah, that's the easement. It's against the law to ride on that as well. I mean,
right there where they got that two-track worn out?
Yeah. That's against the law. You know, several years ago we had tremendous problems with four-wheelers. The problem has subsided a little bit, or maybe a good bit, but we still have complaints, and do it. But I think maybe there's more – well, I don't think it's quite as popular for teenagers to have just a ride as it is now, and maybe it's more back to the hunters using them mostly.
Well, I mean, if that's one of the questions I have. When somebody gets one and they don't have a place to ride them, I often question, like, where are you going to ride it?
Yeah, occasionally we have to go out and get somebody's attention in a neighborhood. They buy one and think it's okay for them, just for the kids to ride up and down a regular neighborhood street.
And it's not.
And so we've had that a few different neighborhoods.
Well, what about if we go from that, we think of gas-powered vehicles, but let's go to electric and go electric vehicles.
Well, there are some electric vehicles and some golf carts that have become certified to drive
street
on
legal,
a street,
right?
Legal.
But just because you hear somebody else doesn't mean every golf cart street legal.
That is correct. In fact, I think they have to be modified to become street legal, I believe.
So when people just say, well, I saw somebody riding a golf, and the age for driving that golf cart, is it 16 as well? Is it a driver?
I think it'd have to be 16. I mean, if you're driving a vehicle on the public highway, you've got to be a licensed individual, because it would be classified as a legal vehicle, so you have to have a DL.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I thought. And, of course, arguments of teenagers telling me it was different. I said, no, it's not different, because I see a good bit of people I know. I know the kids don't have driver's licenses, and it may be a street legal golf cart. I haven't done the inspection, whether it had a VIN or all that kind of stuff, but I see them riding the streets.
You know, in some communities, you move around the South, and of course, other areas of the country, I guess, are real lax with enforcing that, to where a lot of people let the people drive their golf carts in their neighborhoods to go visit neighbors and stuff, and a lot of cities, you know, overlook it.
Lisa's asking, do your deputies go through refresher courses, for example, like continuing education classes and PT training?
Yes, we have an annual retraining every year where they spend a week's in-service training. They spend hours on the range, have to requalify. We have an annual physical fitness test that we actually reward those that pass it with the purchase of generally either a nice pair of running shoes or something else. But it's kind of not mandatory, but we certainly encourage physical fitness, and it's just one of those things that's hard to enforce over time. But we do try to reward it or create it in a positive way.
This one here, to ask you, what are the possibilities of getting more deputies in the Sims area? And I think you ought to explain kind of what your relationship with Sims is and the Sheriff's Department.
Yeah, we're in the process of adding more deputies to the Sims area. We have a contract with the City of Sims where we provide their policing resources, so they don't have to invest and create their own police department, have their own police headquarters and mini jail and things like that. And it's worked out really good. But last year they agreed with the adoption of the latest budget to add 8 additional deputies to our, I think we had an existing 10 there maybe. And so they agreed, and we've added about 4 or 5 since that time, because we're slowly hiring to fill up to our needs. And so by the end of this, their current fiscal year, we should be back up to speed. So yeah, we are adding additional deputies out there.
And y'all working a case out there made news over the weekend, which actually brings us into some of the legislation in Montgomery as well.
Yeah, as many of you have heard, listeners have heard, Director Chief Barber and Chief Batiste and myself have supported a bill that was proposed by Representative Chip Brown in Mobile County to support an amendment to the Constitution that would allow judges to hold suspects in violent cases without bond. That we see over and over cases where people are allowed out on bond, and the big case right now is the Aliyah Blanchard case out of Auburn, where she the killer was out on bond for attempted kidnapping, for the very same thing
exactly
that he committed,
kidnapping
and robbery and stuff, and then he kidnapped her and killed her. Well, in this case, was it this past Saturday, I think it was, or just over the weekend in Sims, these two individuals contacted two other guys, and it was going to be a drug deal, and the two people arrived with some, it was going to be a marijuana marijuana oil or something like that for vaping. And as they arrived, they were approached by these two suspects and put a gun in one of the guy's face and tried to rob him. And so the person, rather than turning over their dope, just gassed it and took off. And one of these suspects started firing at the car, and it went through the car and struck the victim in the torso. And his friend drove him to the hospital, where he was dead on arrival. Fortunately, we were able to put the case back together and identify the two individuals. And guess what? They were out on, they're two brothers. They were out on bond for robbery first degree and burglary. So this is a very type cases. Here are these two kids, young, mm-hmm. already committing violent offenses. And when somebody gets arrested for that, what are they going to do when they're out on bond but to commit more crimes? They need to earn monies for their bail. They need to earn monies for their lawyers, or if they hired one. And so this one of these 19-year-old kids was a son of a doctor in Mobile. Just sad. Sad for any family to lose, but again, that's the dangers and the violence associated with illegal drug usage.
But you're pointing out in these cases, I mean, these are, if this law went through,
alive, and this young man would be alive if those people were not let out on bond.
Right. If the judge could, the way I understood it, talking to Rep Brown, that the judge could, there is a chance the judge could override, but they would have the cover to be able to say, not in this case.
That's right. It would, the judge, again, would be neutral, but the DA's staff would say, judge, we believe this is a dangerous individual to the community. They're you know, been charged with robbery first degree and threats, and they may already have other incidents in the past. We believe this would be a case to hold them without bond. And the judge could say yes, or he could say no. And
once again, that's the point that I think people have missed.
But right,
it doesn't
now,
the judge
can't say no. They're required, unless it's a capital murder case, they're required to set some type of bond. And of course, you can argue under the Constitution a reasonable bond. Well, I don't know how you define reasonable, really. I mean, I define on a lot of things, but does reasonable mean it's got to be they can get out on bond? And if they can't get out on bond, I guess you'd argue, well, it's not reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, the dilemma, the dichotomy we're up against.
All right, Ted, coming right back, more of our conversation with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. Phone number is 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1252, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And there's a whole bunch of texts coming in here, and I'm gonna try my best to do this, and sure. Then you can back me up or disagree. There's a whole bunch of questions on the laws out mm-hmm. there, but last time I checked, y'all aren't making laws.
We're not making the laws at all. The legislature makes the laws, and sometimes they make bad laws and occasionally make good laws, and that's why we try to participate in Montgomery with our legislators to make sure that we point out the deficiencies of certain laws they may be trying to pass.
Because often, but it comes, whatever
comes
the
legislature. Back and forth, you know, left up to us.
Yes. So the legislature, I want y'all to just think about that for a second. The legislature passes something in Montgomery, and it comes down, now it's job of law enforcement to enforce that law. And then y'all are the ones that hear about it. I don't hear people going, if they don't like a law, whether you can drive an ATV on the road or what the difference between that and a motorcycle is or any of that, they get on law enforcement mm-hmm. instead of.
That's right. We're on the end of that spear, you know, when it's not our fault.
Y'all didn't make the law.
And I've worked with the legislature for now 20-plus years. I started to realize when I was police chief that it's very important to stop something before it ever gets out than it is to put it back in the bottle. And I've found over the years that sometimes they'll pass a law knowing it's not perfect or not even right, but they say, well, let's get it passed first, and then we'll come back each year successively and kind of clean it up. They use that term a lot. We'll clean it up.
But y'all are the ones.
They've already passed the law.
Yeah.
Knowing they've got to come back and, quote, clean it up.
You ought to make them ride along. When they have mm-hmm. a law that they figure is the cement's not completely dry, but they pass it and they figure there are going to be issues they're going to clean up, mm-hmm. say, until we get those cleaned up, members of the legislature that voted for this thing, y'all all have shifts with, you know, in one of the 67 counties, you got a sheriff's department, you could ride along or with mm-hmm. a law enforcement. You're going to have to go enforce these laws y'all passed. That would be interesting.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, you know, I don't want to beat up on them too bad because.
Oh, I do. It's just me.
You know, when they're home and time's not of the essence, you have some good discussions with them. But when things get going in Montgomery, it changes so fast and so rapidly, they get inundated and special interest pulling them on every different way, and that's how things slip through and get messed up.
Larry is in Mobile, and you're on with Sheriff Cochran. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Sheriff Cochran. How you doing today?
Good. Thank you, Larry.
I want to tell you, it's a fine job you guys do around the county of Mobile. My question is, anybody that was willing to volunteer part-time work with the Sheriff's Department, how do you go about doing it?
We have a number of programs. We have one program that's called VCOR, Volunteer Corps, and a gentleman, Buddy Peebles, you can call our headquarters and meet with him. And then we also have a reserve deputy program that requires a certain amount of training and a certain amount of hours to contribute. But again, you can contact the sheriff's office, and we could put you in touch with the contact persons that handle that particular ways. But we have, then of course, there's a mounted unit, and there's a sheriff's posse, and there's a sheriff's flotilla, and all of them are operated by volunteers.
Yes, sir. Did you answer my question? I will get in touch with somebody. Thank you so much for your time, Sheriff, and thank you for all you do.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Larry, for the call. Yeah, that's caught my eye over the years. I can't pretend it doesn't when I'm down at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo mm-hmm. and I see flotilla. Mm-hmm. I see friends of mine. So how does that happen if somebody wanted to be part of the flotilla?
I think the flotilla maintains a membership of probably 50 people, and many of them have been on it for 25 years or some longer, and one of them spent 50 years on it. But
wow.
But they volunteer, and they have monthly meetings, I think, and then they have to, you know, when they have a call out, I mean, they'll go out, whether it's to rescue somebody, look for missing duck hunters or mm-hmm. people on the Escatawba River that, you know, it got dark before they came out on the other end, or a lot of times over on the causeway they get stuck on the mud, and mm-hmm. you know, so we have airboats and other boats, and then of course the saddest part is when somebody drowns and goes missing, they go out and drag for the bodies, look for the bodies, and help bring closure for the families. But it's a It saves the county hundreds of thousands of dollars because we would not be able to afford the amount of hours that they put in searching for recovery.
Which is, but I'm thinking about, let's talk about the miles of shoreline, whether we're talking about bay, we're talking about rivers in Mobile County. Holy cow.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important when someone launches a boat or something to leave a float plan on the dash or something, you know, to let us know if you don't make it back in, that we know where to go looking for you at and stuff like that. But they've had some heroic rescues over the many
Absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. But, and they are a search and rescue group. Mm-hmm. It's not, they're not out enforcing, Marine Police enforcing the law.
Yeah, they're not
the law
enforcing
the water.
Any laws. They used to give out T-shirts that are like, I caught you wearing your life vest and that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, but they're not.
So if somebody wanted to get into it, even though if they didn't have the law enforcement background, but they had some sense on the water.
That's right.
Search
sense
and rescue.
On the water, and maybe have their own boat they want to contribute or work with somebody else with the boat and just man hours. Some of them work on the land to man the radio station or stuff. So there's a lot of people putting in a lot of hours of service to the public for that.
All right. They want to get in touch with your office.
Again, they call, and we can put them in touch with the Sheriff's Flotilla Captain.
All right. And the app?
They can go to our website. You know, our MobileCountySO.com has contact information for all of those groups.
So MobileCountySO.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Our website.
And the app, if we're looking for
it. Team Share.
Can find out who's in jail?
Absolutely. Make a 24-hour booking.
Still the most popular part of the app?
It is. You can find out if your neighbor's wanted.
There you go.
If they are, let us know.
Good deal. Sheriff, as always, thank you.
Been very fast. Thank you for having me. Always great callers.
Can't wait to see
you.
Happy
Mardi Gras.
Next month. Happy Mardi Gras. I will see you down at the Mardi Gras. Coming right back. Hour number 2 of Midday Mobile. Y'all stay right there.